This is PCJ Radio International.
Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Keith Perron.
Hello and welcome to the program. We begin today to tell you about some major changes that are taking place at Radio Australia beginning on Monday, June the 22nd. Many of the favorite programs at Radio Australia, like Connect Asia, are being cancelled and being replaced with new content. Radio Australia has been working on a new schedule for the past 6 months, and they made it available in the past couple of days. There are also some delivery changes to that content. Chinese to China on shortwave is being cut, along with Indonesian to Indonesia later this month. Next, we hear from Sue Ahern, the editor of Radio Network Management at ABC International. She speaks with Richard Ayrward.
Our schedule has been refreshed. That's what we've been doing for the last 6 months, prioritising what we do and where radio is still the main means of communication, which is into the Pacific and Mekong. That has how most people get their information. So our schedule reflects the emphasis on the audiences in those regions. So we'll start with a very Pacific focus, and then moving into more of content for the Mekong later in the morning.
Now, in terms of Connect Asia, this is the last edition of the program today, so how will that be replaced under the new schedule in terms of covering Asian content?
Well, we'll have a lot more content that's going on different platforms. Part of the research that we've found and that we've been doing in each market over the last 6 months has found that audiences in Asia are consuming their media via mobile and digital platforms. So that's where we've got to move that content, and that's how to reach the audiences in Asia.
So, in essence, what we're talking about is not necessarily a reduction in the amount of coverage of the region, but just differences in the way that information is disseminated.
That's right, because we have to go where the audience is, and I think we've all seen the huge changes in media consumption in the last couple of years. I think we still don't know where the media is going to end up, because we can see newspapers all around us are changing what they do. The ABC is changing what it does, and we've got to go where the audience is. And if they're on platforms like mobile phones, and we've got to have that content there so we can reach them.
What about the various language groups that broadcast to, obviously, for Radio Australia as well? That they are also part of the restructure, so what will happen to them?
Well, we're making a lot more content on digital and mobile platforms. We know in Indonesia and in China, that's how people are consuming their media. In Cambodia, Myanmar and Papua New Guinea, we'll still have a really strong radio presence, because those markets, we know that's how people consume and communicate. But in Indonesia and China in particular, those markets will become digital platforms. We'll launch an Indonesian and a Mandarin app in the next few months. The first one will be the Mandarin app, and that should be available at the end of July, and the Indonesian app later in the year.
So in terms of the broader future for Radio Australia, presumably this is part of an ongoing process, because plainly some of those countries you mentioned, they will gradually catch up with the rest in terms of digital availability, internet access and so on.
Yes, and we're seeing that in the Pacific as well, that as countries like Papua New Guinea, Tonga, get much better broadband access, they will also move on to more digital platforms. In Papua New Guinea, 95% of people have a mobile phone, and there's a far greater communication, text messages on mobiles. That's just totally changed the way they communicate. But radio still remains the main method of communication, especially in rural areas.
And is the hope that perhaps in making these changes that we as an organisation can interact more readily with our audience and get them to be part of the process?
Yes, that's certainly our strategy, is to connect more with our audience, to have a much bigger audience and be talking with people in the region. We want to exchange ideas, thoughts, knowledge. Obviously, there's a big demand for news and current affairs, and especially in the Pacific, Radio Australia is the leader in this area. They people rely on us for information and news. So that, you know, that's a really important role that we have. We must continue.
That was Sue Ahern, the editor and radio network manager for ABC International, which looks after Radio Australia and Australia Network. She was speaking with Richard Erwart. If you want to find out what the new schedule is from Radio Australia, you can check us out on Facebook. We've posted it there. Just do a search for PCJ Media, PCJ Radio on Facebook, and click on Join the Group, and that's all you need to do. You're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. We now turn our attention to mistakes that are made in broadcasting. Not bloopers, but big gaffes. Either it being radio or television. Over the past few days, we've seen a lot of talk in the news about our TV station in San Francisco, California. KTVU. Now, this station, earlier this week, broadcast the names of the four pilots that were on an Asiana flight that crashed while landing at the San Francisco International Airport. The problem was the names. For some reason, the station had a prank played on them, and the names, which were obviously a racial slur and fourth grade humor, made its way on air. In case you missed it, this is what they read.
We have new information now also on the plane crash. KTVU has just learned the names of the four pilots who were on board the flight. They are Captain Sum Ting Wong, Wee Tu Lo, Ho Li Fook, and Bang Ding Ao. The NTSB has confirmed these are the names of the pilots on board Flight 214 when it crashed. We are working to determine exactly what roles each of them played during the landing on Saturday.
Right after the anchor read that on the air and they went to commercial, she came back and said that those names were incorrect. That evening on their 6 p.m. news, the station issued an official apology.
Tonight we want to take a moment and say that we are sorry. Earlier today, during our noon newscast, we misidentified the pilots in the Asiana Airlines crash. We made several mistakes when we received this information. First of all, we never read the names out loud, phonetically sounding them out. Then, during our phone call to the NTSB, where the person confirmed the spellings of the names, we never asked that person to give us their position within the agency. We heard this person verify the information without questioning who they were, and then we rushed the names onto our noon newscast. Within the last few minutes, the NTSB issued this statement, quote, "The National Transportation Safety Board apologizes for inaccurate and offensive names that were mistakenly confirmed as those of the pilots. A summer intern acted outside the scope of his authority when he erroneously confirmed the names of the flight crew on the aircraft. We work hard to ensure that only appropriate factual information regarding an investigation is released, and we deeply regret today's incident. Appropriate actions will be taken to ensure that such a serious error is not repeated." Now, even with this statement from the NTSB, we want you to know here we accept full responsibility for this mistake. We issued an apology later in the noon newscast. We also apologized on our website and on our social media sites. The fact is, we have a lot of good people here at Channel 2, and on behalf of all of us, I want to tell you that we pride ourselves on getting it right and having the highest of standards and integrity. Clearly, today, that did not happen. We made a mistake. So again, from all of us here at KTVU, we can only offer our sincerest apology in this case.
So as we just heard, the station actually did do the right thing. But unfortunately, it didn't stop there. 2 days after this apology was put out by the TV station, Asiana said they were going to sue the TV station for damaging the airline's reputation. Well, this sort of backfired on the airline. Because they said they were going to sue the TV station for this, well, the airline's reputation got really bad and there was a bit of a backlash against them. They have since dropped the lawsuit. Now, a lot of people are wondering how this can happen, because this is not the first time that erroneous and incorrect information has gone on the air. There is a difference about making a mistake in a story. Maybe the story was updated as you're on the air, and that can happen. But information that is obviously made up and created and has a racial slant. That's another issue. Now, to play the devil's advocate here, we have to look at what was possibly going on behind the scenes at the station. Normally in television, how it works, from my experience, is if you're in front of the camera and you have a teleprompter in front of you, that story has to go through four people before it goes to air. It's usually written by somebody, handed over to a news editor, the producer, given to somebody who enters it into a computer system for the teleprompter, and then is in front of the presenter. Obviously, somewhere along the way, somebody missed it. But we heard him say, just a moment ago in the apology, that they didn't pronounce the names phonetically. So, yes, mistakes do happen. Sometimes the best way to handle the mistake is just like the way this TV station did, and that is to apologize, and that would be the end of it. But unfortunately, with Asiana wanting to bring a lawsuit against the station, the story continued for another 4 days. Sometimes it's better not to say anything at all. For the past couple of weeks, there's been a lot happening in Egypt. Protests in the capital against CNN and other TV news channels. TV news channels being shut down. Resignations at Al Jazeera after they were accused of bias and government control. The military has been cracking down on social media, including media outlets like CNN and others. But how does all this confusion reflect on what's going on politically in the country? Well, our good friend Richard Eady speaks next to the Middle East editor for The Guardian Times in Cairo, Ian Black.
The authorities in Egypt are trying to intimidate our staff, frightening them.
The war for Egypt is taking place in the media just as powerfully and violently as it is taking place on the streets.
Caught on audio, the moment Egyptian security raid and shut down Al Jazeera Arabic's live service.
To the international media, to the entire world, what has happened in Egypt is not a coup d'etat. We are speaking of democracy.
Extraordinary. That's a newscaster celebrating what's just happened. If you can imagine Lee Sales and Tracy Grimshaw and Kochi from Sunrise and the team from the project all got up and draped themselves in the Australian flag and wept with happiness because the ADF had removed our government in a coup, that is pretty much what has been happening in Egypt. The media is absolutely on side. The media that wasn't on side has been closed down. So what's going on right now? Ian Black's The Guardian's Middle East editor. He's in Cairo. I spoke to him a short time ago.
What's very striking being here in this very turbulent period is that the Egyptian media, and particularly the state media, and that's still quite a strong presence, is really behind the military, the overthrow of President Morsi, and it particularly taking the side of the authorities over the killing earlier this week of 50 or more supporters of the Islamist leader in a shooting in Cairo. That's, I think, what you notice when you see what the Egyptian media landscape looks like at this very turbulent period.
Yes, there were certainly some extraordinary scenes in the actual change of government itself. There were news broadcasters draping themselves in the flag and exhorting viewers to go into the street. News broadcasters who you would think, whose job it would be to report impartially, sort of weeping with joy.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say impartially, but I think it's important to stand back and look at what's been happening in Egypt over this last 2.5 years now. You had, first of all, in February 2011, the overthrow of Hosni Mubarak, who had been president for 30 years. The army then took over for a very unhappy period of 16 months or something like that. But then, a year ago, we had the presidential elections and Morsi won. And since then, for the most recent year, we've had a rule of a president who comes from the Muslim Brotherhood. And in each of those periods, the state media has lined up behind the power of the day. And 10 days ago, it changed again. And what we've been seeing in these extraordinary scenes, as you say, is the shift in the position of the official media and much of the independent media to support the new status quo. Egypt is in a state of revolutionary turmoil. Much of the media is controlled by the state. When the bosses change, then the media goes along with it. That's how you had this chorus of support for what is, by any standard, a military coup against an elected government, but a military coup which enjoys very wide support.
You said so much of the media is controlled by the state. How much of the media is directly state-run or at least heavily influenced?
The main newspapers are the same newspapers that have been around in Egypt for, I would say, half a century. Al-Ahram means the pyramids. It's a very symbolic name, of course, for an Egyptian newspaper. Has been the leading newspaper in this country since Gamal Abdel Nasser in the 1950s. But the state media, Al-Ahram, Al-Akhbar, Al-Gumhuriya, means the Republic, are still there, and they've been changing along with these changes of regime, of government, over this last period. State TV, of course, is the same. What's different in recent years, even before the 2011 revolution, is that you have a proliferation of private media, TV channels, and some newspapers as well. The other feature of the last 10 days or so is that since the military takeover, since Morsi's ouster, then private channels that were linked to Islamists, to the Muslim Brotherhood and to others, they've been subject to a crackdown. I think there are 5 private Islamist satellite TV channels that are now off air. So, of course, you're not getting the voice of what is now the opposition at this very volatile time.
What about the position of the International Broadcasters Active in Egypt, Ian? I understand that Al Jazeera has actually been shut down, allegedly for being too supportive of Morsi and his Muslim Brotherhood. What about the other international Arabic broadcaster, Al Arabiya, and even CNN and the BBC?
Well, Al Jazeera is in a category of its own. Al Jazeera, of course, is based in Qatar, a small, very wealthy Gulf state. And it has been seen over the last 2.5 years of this period of what we used to call the Arab Spring, but perhaps no longer do, because the picture is pretty grim and not very spring-like. But Al Jazeera has been a cheerleader for the changes of the Arab Spring, and it's been particularly supportive in its coverage, critics will say, of Islamist movements, and particularly the Muslim Brotherhood. Not just in Egypt, but elsewhere. But because Egypt is such an important country, the largest of the Arab countries, 85 million people, then Al Jazeera's position, appearing to be a partisan of the Brotherhood, has created great hostility here in Egypt. Thus the moves against it here. The hostility isn't new. What's new is that with the change of government, it's become more vulnerable. But of course, it has to be said that there are, I think, 20 or so employees of Al Jazeera in Egypt who resigned, saying that the channel was biased, that they were forced to twist their coverage in a direction which was in support of the Brotherhood. That's contested. The head of Al Jazeera in Egypt has actually written a piece in my own paper, in The Guardian, defending that and saying that Al Jazeera is being persecuted because it's because of its professional standards, and is being persecuted because it tells the truth. Al Jazeera really has been vilified all over the center of Cairo, certainly, where I've been moving around in the last few days. You can see posters attacking Al Jazeera, saying things like, there's a slogan, says in Arabic, it says something like, a camera can kill a country, words to that effect. Other stations, CNN, for example, the American news network, has been attacked a lot. The focus has been, if you like, a rather narrow semantic point, but which, of course, is significant, over the important question of what's taken place in Egypt. Is it a military coup, or is it, as the supporters of the army and the revolution say, a continuation of that revolution? And of course, to describe what's happened here as a military coup is, I do as well. The Guardian does too. It was a military coup, but it has to be said, as I've tried to explain, that it was a military coup with considerable mass support, and a sense that it was Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood who were betraying the revolution, and not the army, still the most powerful force in Egypt, which stepped in to change things at the top. So the hostility towards the media, the foreign media, Al Jazeera, CNN, is a reflection of that sense in Egypt, the real anger at the way events are being portrayed by outsiders.
Ian, briefly, is there, I suppose, a different narrative being told in any part of the media that ordinary Egyptians can access at the moment?
I would say no, actually. I think that the only way that you would find an alternative accounts would be in that huge world of social media, where often, of course, people are speaking to like-minded friends and colleagues. So if you're a Muslim Brotherhood supporter in Egypt today and you feel angry and you feel disenfranchised and you feel that the enemies of Islam or of Egypt are plotting against you and so on and so forth, then you're doing that really in your own networks. But of course, that's not the same as controlling newspapers and television channels, and the fact that the authorities have moved against those, the TV channels in particular, is no coincidence. It obviously is an attempt to crack down on them. So everything that's happening in the media is a reflection of that. When things get tough, it's tough for the media too.
Ian, I'm going to let you get back to your day job. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You can hear PCJ Radio while on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is a free news, talk, and entertainment mobile app available for your smartphone. Downloading is quick and easy. Just find Stitcher from the App Store. Then, during registration, hit the promo code box and enter PCJ to get automatically entered to win $100. For more information, go to www.pcjmedia.com and click on the Stitcher logo on the right menu. PCJ Radio on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio.
Well, it's now time to take a look at what we can expect propagation-wise over the next 7 days. Here's Dan Hensley.
Here's propagation for the week from July 20th to July 26, 2013. A 10.7 centimeter flux of 105 on July 20th, July 21st, 120, July 22nd, 110, July 23rd, 105, July 24th and 25th, 100, July 26th, 105. The A index starts out at 15 on July 20th and 21st, dropping down to 8 July 22nd, down to 5 July 23rd and 24th, up to 18 on July 25th, spiking at a high of 30 on July 26th. The KP index is 4 for the first 2 days of this week. That's the 20th and 21st. On July 22nd, a KP index of 3. July 23rd and 24th, a KP index of 2. July 25th, KP index of 4. On July 26th, the KP index is 5. Sunspot 1794 is passing out of view this week, leaving 1791 through 93 and 1795 in view. 1791 has developed a beta gamma delta magnetic field that harbors energy for M and X class solar flares. Back to you, Keith.
All right, thanks a lot, Dan. Well, guess what? We're now out of time. If you want to contact us to let us know what you think of the program or have any story ideas or suggestions, our email address is very simple, mnp@pcjmedia.com. Once again, mnp@pcjmedia.com. You can also check out all past editions of the show by visiting our website, www.pcjmedia.com/Media Network Plus, all one word. Now, before we go, as you're probably aware, we've been doing a number of test transmissions to Southeast and East Asia, and we've been getting very good feedback from them. And even though we're only targeting to these two specific areas, we've been getting reports from Europe, Latin America, Australia, even the United States. Now, if you want to tune in, it's Sundays from 13:30 to 14:30 UTC. That's Sundays from 13:30 to 14:30 UTC. The frequency is 11835 kHz. You can find all the details at our website, www.pcjmedia.com. So on behalf of the whole team that helped put the program together, this is Keith Perron wishing you well, hoping to see you again in 7 days' time. 73 and 88 to the ladies.